It's really interesting for me to walk across from the Presidio in San Francisco. The Presidio is a former military base. And I walked across the road and walked down to Crissy Field just across the way to the salt marshes and the bay with the great bridge looming over the water. There were hundreds of people gathered to watch as they picnicked and had their children on their shoulders. They had come to watch the Blue Angels, the U.S. military flying squad, which travels around and sort of performs military tricks in these huge military machines. And tucked under some trees with yellow caution tape around a small area just right on the bay was a group of Native Americans who were in the middle of a ritual, actually on the fourth day of a four-day ritual that had been engaged in for the past 4 years. Every year for 4 days, a group of Native Americans came to this spot, and they came to bless the land and commemorate those who had once lived there. And this particular area, the salt marshes, have been rejuvenated over recent years. And they came and prayed to each direction, one a day, and had ceremonies and sweats and discussions and tree plantings. And it was quite an odd juxtaposition with these jets flying overhead, screaming really loud. And this group of Native peoples under that shadow, carrying on traditions that were very, very old. And I sat down with a couple of the folks that were there, including Willard Rhodes, whose Native name is Tuku, who is from a Pitt River tribe called the Asatue, and a young man named Anthony, who is part Ohlone, was sitting there as well, and I had a chance to speak with them both. Here now is the discussion that followed in the shadow of the Blue Angels war machines flying overhead in San Francisco. Tell me your name.
Rhodes.
Willard Rhodes?
Rhodes, R-H-O-A-D-E-S.
And what is the name that you were born with?
Well, in the English language, I'm named Willard, Willard Wesley. But in my Indian people called me Tuku, which means the dirt of the earth, you know, what I'm made out of.
And what tribe were you born into?
I am Isatui, one band of the Pitt River tribe.
And what's happening here today in San Francisco?
Just an Indian gathering. That's all I know about it.
There, it's been going on for some days?
Yeah, it's been going on about three days now that I know of. And I just came down to listen.
And what else is happening? There's airplanes flying around.
Well, some people practicing war, I guess you might call it. Practicing how to destroy each other.
I think it's an air show.
What's your name?
Anthony Sewell.
Are you Native American or partly? Or?
Yeah. Ohlone, Kostano, and Remsen.
What's been happening here these past days?
Like you said, it's a Native American ceremony, and right now there's just an air show going on.
Yeah, I think they're practicing war, and some people have gotten pretty good at it.
Oh, well, they think they have. They're building up to their own destruction, according to what's going to happen. Prophecy, if that's what we want, it's leading up to that. I would have I would have to go back to when I was a little boy to tell you exactly how things are working towards what's coming. When I was little, say about, well, between 2 and 8 years old, I slept with my grandmother, and she used to tell me, this is going to happen, people are going to do this. She said, pretty soon they're going to be talking on web, she said. And she said, the whole country will be webbed. And she said, and then they're going to watch what's going on around the world in boxes, she said. They're going to see it. Look like live things in the box, she said. Well, I seen that happen. I knowed about it before it happened, and I know that after I seen it, I knowed what it was. Then she said they're going to talk on telephones. Didn't call it telephones, but she said they're going to talk on webs that you can't see. Well, now they're using them now, talking on webs that you can't see the webs, you can't see the wires. And then she said, and they're going to look at all the stars. They're going up in the air. They're going to fly around up there looking at them. And then she said, they're going to build a big platform. And she said, the two brothers are going to build it. And she called them the Mouse Brothers, the Coyote's sons. Well, they're building that platform now. She said, you'll be able to see it from here. It'll be that big when it's finished. She said, after they get that built, then they're going to build a house and put it on the moon. And she said, and when people start to live in it, that ladder is going to fall or bust, she said. And then he said, the two brothers are going to fight. The east people from the east are going to fight the people from the west. And she said they're going to drop baskets full of ashes in the ocean between the two countries. And everything in that ocean is going to die, she said. Well, they're leading up to that now. They've already got those bombs, as you want to call them. Baskets full of ashes. That's all they are, is ashes anyway. And the ashes is what kills the people. It's the poison out of that. That's coming. And it's coming pretty doggone fast. I've seen it in our stories how it's worked up to that. As the things that she told me that were going to happen. It's coming steps. And she said, and that's the last thing they're going to do. And she said, if the people don't listen and the people don't believe, she said, they'll be destroyed by this. It's coming. They won't die, really, she said, but they'll be suffering for many years. But she said, if you will believe it, she said, they will be picked up the same way that we were brought here in the beginning. So that's what I'm hoping for. If they don't stop their foolishness, they're going to hurt them, kill themselves. And that's the way I look at it. And they're sure practicing hard, too. All over. Canada. Here in the United States. All over the world, they're practicing how to destroy each other. And they're going to do it. And it's coming pretty fast. Maybe you, as young as you are, you might be see it. You might. It could come that quick.
What is there to do or not do about that?
Stop their foolishness. Get back to reality. Leave other people alone. This United States is the one that's doing it. It's not the other world, the other side. It's the United States that's pushing it. Because they've got interest in everything over there they think they have. and they want to control everything. And every nation that has tried to control the world has killed itself. You look back in history, history repeats itself over and over again. Whenever you try to destroy something, you destroy yourself.
When I think about it, it seems that countries do this, like you're saying, when they try to destroy something, they destroy themselves. And then I think that people, each person does this too inside, that we can want to destroy things that we don't like about ourselves or push those things away. And then that destroys ourselves, though. Do you think it's similar to this?
In a sense, yes. You can destroy yourself by your own thoughts. Greed probably is the worst. Vanity is another thing, thinking that you're better than anybody else. Greed and money goes together. Our people used to never have money. They never used it. Everything was freely given. If you needed something, somebody else would give it to you, because they seen the need. Now, if they see the need, they have to have money to pay for it. And money isn't very old compared to this world or even people. Money is a new thing. But greed and vanity is the worst thing that destroys more people than anything. Big me and little you.
It's about this war that George Bush is trying to come up with. It really isn't right to come up with this. Like he's saying before, greed isn't good. And what he's trying to do is take oil from another country and just to get money or whatever his reasons are. And the other side thinks that they're good too. Both sides aren't good, but he's just doing other stuff that's completely evil and is not good at all. And some people say that we're all one and we're all brothers and sisters. But why do you fight with your brothers and sisters like that? How would you fight with your brothers and sisters like that? Killing each other. It's not right.
How old are you?
12.
Do you talk about this in school?
No, not really.
Do you talk about Native ways in school at all?
No, they took that away a long time ago. My grandmother was actually, she never got, her great, my great-grandmother, excuse me, she was never taught these ways. She was told that it wasn't right to be taught these ways, so she never got taught these ways. My mother, she got turned into this by my two uncles. One uncle passed away, and the uncle that's left, he's very strong in his power. He does all these wonderful things that he does, and he got her into this, and my other uncle, and she's also a very powerful person. But again, my great grandmother got taken these ways away. She didn't know her language. She never talked about this. First time I learned about this was like when I was 7, and then I was ashamed of being Indian. I didn't really like them at all. I just told other people I was something else. Now I'm proud to be of it because I know what it is.
You, I was a little boy, but you think you didn't do anything. I've been in these fights, you might call it, or talking to people ever since I was a little boy. I was probably about 7 or 8 years old when I started talking after I left my grandmother. Although I slept with my grandfather after that, and he used to talk to me until I was probably about 12. Then he took me up on the mountain and left me up there. After I came back, and I was sent to a government school. That was back in 28 and 29. And I was talking to little children my age about our Indian problems, our Indian stories. and the lieutenant. That school was run by the Army at that time. The lieutenant took me upstairs, gave me a beating, and told me never to talk like that again or tell them kind of stories. And then he turned me over to the matron. I got another whipping from her, talked to the same way, never to talk and tell stories, never to think about it. And I had to scrub floors for about a week with a brush and my hands and knees a bucket of soapy water. And I have never quit talking for my people. Even though I was young, I'm almost 84 now. I'll be 84 next month. And I'm still talking about it. I'm still for my people. I don't care what happens. I went to the war, yes. I went to World War II. But I had a reason for going. I didn't go there to destroy anything or destroy people, because I went in before the fight started. I thought, well, that's a good chance for me to go and see other countries, to see other people. Maybe I can learn something from them. So they sent me to the Philippine Islands. I learned from the Filipinos the same thing that my old folks told me. I learned from Australia, those people, I learned from them the same things that my old people taught me. And I'm still talking about it. I have no fear of government getting after me. If they want to throw me in jail, okay, it don't make no difference. Because I will continue to talk about it as long as I live. I'm not afraid of it.
Have you seen that happen with Native peoples, that if they're talking, they get taken away by the government?
I've seen it when I was young, yes. I've told them, seen and tell them not to do that. A lot of people were brainwashed from schools. The schools you go to now are a brainwashing system. It's not really an education system. It's a brainwashing system. When you go to preschool and kindergarten, that's when the brainwashing starts. They teach you what? Regimentation. After you get out of that schools, that small schools, they still teach you regimentation and percentages. When I say percentages, is they teach you how to beat the other man out of something. If you've got 50 cents, you intend to take that 50 cents and take a dollar and a half away from the other man. That's what they teach you, and that's what I mean by percentages. Maybe people don't understand that part of it, but that's the way I look at it, and that's the way I see it. I've been around this old world for quite a few years. I worked all my life for a living, but I worked honestly. I never did go and ask a man for a raise. If I agreed to work for him for a certain wage, that's what I took. I never asked for any more. If he wanted to give me more, all right, I took it. But I never did ask for it.
I want to ask both of you, because you mentioned earlier power, that some of your relatives are very powerful, and people have different ideas of what power means and where it comes from. And there can be the attitude that power comes from a gun or from these airplanes that are flying really fast and are able to drop bombs on people. And then there's a really different idea of what power is and where it comes from.
Well, you say powerful as in guns, but guns aren't really powerful. They can take your life away, but you're still alive. You can still talk. You can't breathe. You can't eat or anything, but you're still alive in spirit. And those airplanes that are flying around, they're in a sense you can say they're powerful because they're fast, but that's about it. They can't really do anything.
Where do you think real power comes from?
Comes from your heart. Comes from everything around you. It comes from everybody around you.
Well, there's a lot of different types of power. The main type of power is your own self. It's your own mind. You can be contented with your own thoughts if you use it in the right manner. If you use your mind or your thoughts to help people instead of yourself, you're all right. You'll be satisfied. You'll even be contented with what you're doing. If you use your thoughts to hurt people, to hurt and to benefit yourself, you will suffer for it because you will think about it. It'll make you worry. So there's all kinds of power, you might call it. But your biggest power is your own self. It's your own mind.
Do you know much of the history of Native people right here on this land where we are? And someone told me earlier that some of the people here are direct relatives, direct descendants of the Native people that met the Spaniards right across the bay here.
Yeah, you'd have to ask those people because I'm not from here. I don't know their story.
My family is actually from Carmel, and I have some Spanish blood in me, and the Spanish part was actually, he was really famous, I guess, from Father Serra, who was building these missions. His name was Manuel Butron, and the reason I got my Indian blood, because he married a Native American. I don't know her name right now, but yeah, that's where our family's from, is Carmel.
Talking about the destruction of people up there in my country in 1850-something, I forget what year it was, they drove our people out of there, out of the country, made them walk from Fall River Valley, which is way up north, clear into Mendocino County. They walked afoot in wintertime. And my great-grandfather packed my grandfather when my grandfather was about 14 or 15 years old because his shoes wore out and he didn't want his feet to freeze, so he packed him over the mountain. And when they got over there, well, they went into that Round Valley Reservation, and my grandfather stayed there until he was almost full-grown man. He had two children there, and he finally left because of what his wife did. He caught his wife with the store man, the man that owned the store. So he left. He gave what money he had to his wife's old folks, the man and father and mother. He gave them what money he had, and he told him, "You take care of the kids, you know." And then he left and he went back to Hattrick, where he was from, over the mountain. And he was an instigator, or you might say one of the warriors that fought in the people up there on the Hattrick side. He fought for the land and stuff, and he got quite a bit of land for what Hattrick people were left. And he was also a powerful medicine man, a doctor, if you want to call him that, because he was able to cure a lot of different kinds of sicknesses. I seen him operate on a person that had appendix with no instrument, just his bare hands. He reached right into the man's stomach from the side, and it bled for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And then it healed itself right up. He was that type of a doctor. A lot of things I seen him do that was, you know, just no other man could I ever seen do it. When they used to come after him to go doctor somebody, to teach him, he never went with them. He never rode a horse to go. He used to tell them, you guys go ahead and have me smoke ready someplace. Wait for me there. But when they got there, he was always there. I seen him do that after the cars came into the country. They used to come after him, and they had old cars, and come after him to go doctor. He'd tell them, you wait for me over there. And he'd be there when they got there. So how did he get there that fast? He was that type of a man. I know two doctors like that. One of them down here in Hoopaw used to do the same thing. Well, I actually know three of them. One man, I didn't know he was a doctor at the time, or didn't know he was a medicine person. But he always had a cane with him. And he never rode a car. I didn't know him that well at the time. He wouldn't ride with anybody when they went to the store. The store was probably about 12 miles from his house. And the people would ask him if he wanted to ride up the store, and he would tell them no. He said, I'll walk. But when they got to the store, he'd already be there. And one day, one man had this, I don't know, just asked him. She said, how do you travel that fast? He said, how do you do that? He said, do you want to borrow my cane? So that's the only kind of answer that he gave him. And a funny thing happened during the flood there in 1955, I think it was, or 55 or 56, I forgot just when it was on the Klamath River. He was on the other side of the river. He went hunting that morning. And he said, and I'll be back. He said, when I come back, we'll have a good feed. He said, because you know you could kill a deer. So I waited for him. It was during that flood, that bridge washed out. And the bridge was gone, and I was standing there. I knew he was going to come back, and he'd see the bridge gone, and I wondered what he was going to do. So I asked him, I said, when are you coming across? Which way are you coming back? He said, you go on in the house, he said, and build a fire, he said, and put the pan on. He said, we'll have meat for supper. About a half hour, he walked in. How did he cross that river? I don't know. He wasn't wet. He had still had the deer on his back. But he had his cane in his hand. I never asked him about his cane, but I know about it. So there's a lot of things that people don't understand about our people.
Do you think that these types of powers or abilities are natural for everyone? And
no, not natural for everyone, because you have to go look for it. I only know two young people now that are starting in, and they're both all right. They both have power to do things. And I've sent them, tried to teach them what to do, and they did it. And now they're teaching, they're talking. They've even healed a lot of people already. So it's going to come back, because they will teach somebody to Ramgol. These are in my own tribe, my own people. Time for this boy to go out someplace by himself on a mountain somewhere, don't matter where. Stay out there and fast and pray about something, about your people. And something will talk to you, something will let you know. It'll even happen to you if you think the right way. Because that's the way the old people a long time ago used to do things. Even well. Go back into your own Bible, put it that way. Look what the Christ himself had to do. He went out and fasted and prayed for 40 days and 40 nights before he could help the people. John the Baptist, 30 days and 30 nights, before he could help the people look back in history. It's been all through that, and that's the way our old people did, same thing. That's what I had to do when I was young as him. He said he was 12 years old. That's when I went out. So that's how I know.
Thanks for talking with me.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you. I'm glad to talk to anybody that was willing to listen. I'll tell you one more thing. What's coming pretty quick. You know that they're building this big satellite Russia and the United States are building. When they get that built, they're going to put that house on the moon. When they put that house on the moon, this is when the destruction's coming to this country. And that's coming pretty doggone fast. Hope you warn the people of it so that they won't put that up there. If they can stop them from putting that there, this country will go on, and pretty quick it'll be a good place again.
What is that house that's going to be on the moon? What kind of building is that?
I really don't know, but they said it creates its own atmosphere. It'll have its own jungle in it. It'll have its own animals in it. And it'll create its own... One thing, it's just a big bubble of some type. I don't know just what it is. I've seen things happen. I've told stories that were told to me when I was young. I was told about all these dams that's being built up in the rivers, all the power lines that were going to be built, because they called them all webs. He said this country would be all webbed. He said it'll be all measured, webbed. He said then you won't be able to see those webs, but they'll be there. Well, this country's all measured off into sections, so they're webbed. He said pretty quick you'll hear people will be talking on webs that you can't even see the webs. Well, they're doing that now. They're talking on these little telephones that have no webs to it, no wires, but they are webbed. Televisions, I've seen that happen. I was told about televisions when I was little, and I've seen it happen. I've seen all these things come, so I know our stories are not lies. They are all true stories. So what I'm telling you, I know is going to happen. I have seen it, listened to it, watched it, see everything that they're made. I was told about all these airplanes that were coming. We never had those things, how they were going to operate, they were going to push themselves. Well, they're pushing themselves, not pulling themselves anymore. It's all been told, and I worry about people. So in your little station, I hope you tell it. Somebody should hear it. Then the more people hear it, the better off they are. And I've been talking this way for a good many years. I've been telling it what's coming. I told them about televisions before they got here. I told them about these telephones that didn't have no wires on before they got here.
Thank you. Thanks also for talking to me.
They have to kill us. because they can't break our spirit. What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom.
Another new pride and another new dignity. I never lived truth because I've only lived insanity. Humanity, insanity. This is what you've done to me. This is what you do to me. So now it's like the liberty. This is the reality that Gaba has gave. From the slayer to the slave and the cradle to the grave. A world with no windows and a world with no mirrors. A world with no doors and a world with no tears. No mother since my birth because I never touched the earth. And I never touched the sky because I never knew why. See, I never knew the moon. I never knew humanity and nature all one. Cause I never lived the circle, see I've only lived the square. I've only lived the square cause they taught me not to care. You know, think for yourself, put compassion on the shelf. Compete until you die and defeat to get by. See, I never knew to question all the things that I was taught. I never realized the falseness of that plot. From the slayer to the slave and the cradle to the grave. The direction of my path that I've not been saved. I was saved by my roots, just my true culture. I saw through the lies of that western vulture. The western culture and all its inhumanity ravages the earth as a perpetrates insanity. Humanity, insanity. This is what you've done to me. This is what you do to me. So now it's not a liberty.
There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
In the spirit of the flower,
we choose the way of Earth.
In the spirit of Zapata, and in the spirit of crazy horse. To your mother, all my sisters and brothers, a sagrada donna, seeing the sacred earth mother. The sacred earth mother, but she's only half alive. She's only half alive, but we need it to survive. We need it to survive, but we lost all our connection. Our connection to the circle and the sacred four directions. The sacred 4D and its manifestations reveals all material and all creation. From the mother to the earth, to the sky, to the father, to the earth, to the air, to the fire, to the water, to the north, to the south, to the east, to the west. When we used to live in harmony, we used to live the best. We used to give and take, we used to take and give. We used to be in balance, that's how we used to live. This is sacred circle, this is our connection. Our mother is sick and she's cut up all sections. How it was and how it shall be. Unless we understand this, we will never be free. We will never be free unless we live in harmony. We will never be free unless we realize prophecy. Our son's destiny. Destiny is our son, cause our son holds a key. Our son holds a key for our people to be free. Our son holds a key for the world to see that our son will save the world eventually. 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 And a slow 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 will save the world eventually. Oh, me, Dr. Yossi, all my relations.
Because they can't break our spirit.